Well, I appreciate you, you know, those that were able to share a little bit about your dad and some of the positive things. I know all of us realize that we are commanded to honor our fathers and our mothers. And thankfully, here in this country, we actually have two holidays where we're set time aside specifically to honor our parents. And that was started up in the early 1900s, so it's just been a little over 100 years that we've been doing that. And we have to keep in mind that these times of honoring mom and dad can be very difficult for a few, because they didn't have a mom and dad that cared for them the way they should have. This week I saw a friend of mine made a post, and she brought that up, that when Mother's Day or Father's Day comes around, in the past, she really didn't know what to do with it, because she realized that there was good mothers and fathers out there, but that wasn't her experience. So young men, listen up. You have the opportunity to change the world in ways you don't understand. If you have a good dad, follow his example. Outdo his example. Because my friend posted that she met a young man who decided he was going to be a good dad. And now she gets it. She enjoys Father's Day coming around because her husband is the dad to her sons and daughter that she wished she would have had. Deuteronomy 5 and verse 16, it says, "Honor your father and your mother as the Lord your God commanded you, so that your days may be long and that it may go well with you in the land that the Lord your God has given you." Now, when we're young, we look at that promise and we go, well, good, because I would like to go this, and I'd like to travel to here, and I'd like to see this. But I don't know if that's exactly the reason God was given that promise. Just like last Sabbath, Jeremy as a dad wanted more time to be a dad. And thankfully, he was granted that. This promise right here was fulfilled for a while longer. And like Norma shared here a few moments ago, about her dad's concern about her spiritual welfare. My dad had concerns, legitimate concerns, about my spiritual welfare. He didn't get to see my transformation. Now I need that box. And often I think about the fact that I have the opportunity to honor my dad today by trying to be a dad and a husband that he was hoping I was going to be. One that was immersed in God's word and in his way. I watched my dad every evening. I've shared this with you guys. He had out the Bible and a notebook. He was studying. He was reading the word. Years later, after his death, found out he was writing the word, word for word. He wrote out the Bible several times. Doesn't matter if he was always around for me. He was always around for God. When we read through the story of Esther, we're going to talk about honor today. Not so much for moms and dads, but honoring our Father in heaven. When we read through the story of Esther, it's loaded almost verse after verse with aspects of honor or dishonor. It starts with the king honoring himself with a great feast to showcase his accomplishments. And then he feels dishonored when he calls his queen, Vashti, out to parade and dance for all of his buddies, in a sense. And because she didn't come out, why, then the king's officials said, you know what? She needs to be banished, in a sense, so that their wives, or all the wives of the land, all the females, wouldn't start dishonoring their husbands and other males. We look at Esther, chapter 1 and verse 21. It says, this advice pleased the king and the officials, and the king did as Memucan proposed. He sent letters to all the royal provinces, to every province in its own script, and to every people in its own language, declaring that every man should be master of his own house, should be given honor even when honor's not due. The king then starts a search for a better queen. He wants honor, better honor from the next queen. And Mordecai, the Jew, he brings in young Esther, who he's the guardian of, because she doesn't have a mom or a dad. And while Esther is in consideration, Mordecai hears about a plot that would kill the king. And he foils it by getting word through Esther to the king. In Esther chapter 3 and verse 1, it says, after these things, King Ahasuerus promoted Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, and advanced him and set his seat above all the officials who were with him. And all the king's servants who were at the king's gate bowed down and did obedience to Haman, for the king had so commanded concerning him. But Mordecai did not bow down or do obedience. So this Haman, he's a man that loves honor for all the wrong reasons. He loves it most when he gets honor from those above him, the king and the queen. He doesn't like it that when he goes out from the palace and runs into Mordecai, Mordecai doesn't give him the honor that he thinks he should get. So instead of simply dealing with Mordecai, Haman decides to put a plan in motion that would destroy all the Jews through the king's edict. And during that time, the king is brought to remembrance one evening that Mordecai had foiled this plot towards the king and realizes that he was never honored for doing so. So the king asks Haman, how should I honor this one to the greatest extent, someone that I care, that I want to bestow great honor upon? How would I do it? Of course, Haman, he just assumes it's going to be for him. So he comes up with a plan, assuming that he's going to be the benefactor of this plan, and tells the king how to honor the one he wants to honor the most. And slightly shocked, Haman's taken a little bit off guard when he's told by the king to go parade Mordecai around the city on the king's horse and wearing the king's robe and tell people to bow down to Mordecai as this is the person that the king would honor. Esther and Mordecai have heard about this plot to overthrow the Jews. And they've been talking with God and with each other. Esther has a plan. She invites the king and Haman to a feast, just for them. Esther 5 and verse 9, it says, Haman went out that day happy and in good spirits. But when Haman saw Mordecai in the king's gate and observed that he neither rose nor trembled before him, he was infuriated with Mordecai. Nevertheless, Haman restrained himself and went home. Then he sent and called for his friends and his wife Zeresh. And Haman recounted to them the splendor of his riches and the number of his sons and all the promotions with which the king had honored him and how he had advanced him above the officials and the ministers of the queen. And Haman even had to add that even Queen Esther let no one but myself come with the king to the banquet that she's prepared for us. Tomorrow also I am invited by her together with the king. Yet all this does me no good so long as I see the Jew Mordecai sitting at the king's gate. So then Haman's wife, after hearing this, suggests that he build a gallows and hang Mordecai right in front of their own house. Esther, at the second meal of her feast for the king and Mordecai, exposes Haman's plan to the king to destroy her and her people. In Esther 7 and verse 7, the king rose from the feast in wrath and went into the palace garden, but Haman stayed to beg his life from Queen Esther, for he saw that the king had determined to destroy him. When the king returned from the palace garden to the banquet hall, Haman had thrown himself on the couch where Esther was reclining, and the king said, "Will he even assault the queen in my presence, in my own house?" And as his words left the mouth of the king, they covered Haman's face. Then Harbona, one of the eunuchs in attendance of the king, said, "Look, the very gallows that Haman has prepared for Mordecai, whose word saved the king, stands at Haman's house, 50 cubits high." And the king said, "Hang him on that." In verse 10, so they hung Haman on the gallows that he had prepared for Mordecai, and the anger of the king abated. There's honor going back and forth all over through these verses, isn't there? To finish it up in Esther 8, in verse 1, on that day King Ahasuerus gave to Queen Esther the house of Haman, the enemy of the Jews, and Mordecai came before the king, for Esther had told what he was to her. She honored Mordecai, her uncle, or cousin, I don't remember which uncle I think it was. She honored him by explaining to the king who he was to her and what he had done for her. And the king took off his signet ring, which he had taken from Haman, and he gave it to Mordecai. So Esther set Mordecai over the house of Haman. Then Esther spoke again to the king, and she fell at his feet, weeping and pleading with him to avert the evil design of Haman and the Agagite, and the plot that he had devised against the Jews. And the king held out the golden scepter to Esther. And Esther rose and stood before the king. She said, "If it pleases the king, and if I have won his favor, and if the thing seems right before the king, and I have his approval, let an order be written to revoke the letters devised by Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, which he wrote, giving orders to destroy the Jews who are in all the provinces of the king. For how can I bear to see the calamity that is coming on my people, or how can I bear to see the destruction of my kindred?" Then King Ahasuerus said to Queen Esther and to the Jew Mordecai, "See, I have given Esther the house of Haman, and they have hanged him on the gallows because he plotted to lay his hands on the Jews. You may write as you please with regard to the Jews in the name of the king and seal it with the king's ring, for an edict written in the name of the king and sealed with the king's ring cannot be revoked." Once again, Mordecai is honored by the king. And we see Esther more honoring the king by approaching in humility. Verse 15, then Mordecai went out from the presence of the king wearing royal robes of blue and white with such a great golden crown and a mantle of fine linen and purple, while the city of Susa shouted and rejoiced. For the Jews there was light and gladness, joy and honor. In every province and in every city, wherever the king's command and his edict came, there was gladness and joy among the Jews. A festival and a holiday furthermore, many of the people of the country professed to be Jews because of the fear of the Jews had fallen upon them. Then in chapter 10 and verse 1, King Ahasuerus laid tribute on the land and on the islands of the sea. All the acts of his power and might and the full account of the high honor of Mordecai to which the king advanced him, are they not written in the annals of the kings of Media and of the Medes and Persians? For Mordecai the Jew was next in rank to King Ahasuerus, and he was powerful among the Jews and popular with his many kindred, for he sought the good of his people and interceded for the welfare of all of his descendants. Here we see God give Mordecai and Esther honor by including them and their story in his word. Just like Haman or Mordecai or Esther or the king, all of us give honor in one way or another to something or to someone. But is it always the right kind of honor and for the right reason? Because that last verse of chapter 10 that we just read, or verse 3 of chapter 10, says, because Mordecai sought the good of his people and interceded for the welfare of his descendants. How much time do we spend looking for honor for ourselves like Haman did, instead of focusing and doing and speaking honorable things? And where should we turn that honor towards? Should it not be towards our Father in heaven? And for what reason? Let's go to Psalms 50. Jeremy read a wonderful psalm. It's along the same lines. Psalms 50 and verse 1, a psalm of Asaph, the mighty one. God the Lord speaks and summons the earth from the rising of the sun to its setting. Out of Zion, the perfection of beauty, God shines forth. Our God comes and does not keep silence. Before him is a devouring fire and a mighty tempest all around him. He calls to the heavens above and to the earth that he may judge his people. Gather to me my faithful ones who made a covenant with me by sacrifice. The heavens declare his righteousness, for God himself is judge. Hear, O my people, and I will speak. O Israel, I will testify against you. I am God, your God. There's no one like him. Verse 8. Not for your sacrifices do I rebuke you. Your burnt offerings are continually before me. I will not accept a bull from your house or goats from your folds, for every wild animal of the forest is mine, the cattle of a thousand hills. I know of the birds of the air and all that moves in the field, it's mine. If I were hungry, I would not tell you, for the world and all that is in it is mine. I do not eat the flesh of bulls or drink the blood of goats. Offer to God a sacrifice of thanksgiving and pay your vows to the Most High. Honor our Father in heaven. Verse 15, call on me in the day of trouble, and I will deliver you, and you shall glorify me. Honor our Father in heaven. So how do we go about honoring our Father in heaven? He gave us 10 simple steps. They're in Exodus 20 and Deuteronomy 5. If you want to follow along, go to Deuteronomy 5 and start in verse 6. He says, have no other gods before me. Actually, before he says that, he says, remember what I've done for you. And that's what we just did about our physical fathers, isn't it? But we remember what our Father in heaven has done for us. So what's that commandment say about honor? Says, honor our Father in heaven, what he is, what he is doing, and what he has planned for us, and attribute it to no other, no other. If we jump down to the second command, he says, make no idols. Because no other is worthy of his honor. The third one, he says, do not take the Lord's name in vain. That means we honor his name and his image. And we have to remember that we were created in his image. What we do with these bodies can either honor him or dishonor him. The fourth one, keep the Sabbath holy. We honor him by keeping or following his example of rest on the Sabbath. The fifth one, honor your parents. Honor those who raised you, especially those who raised you in his word, in his way. The sixth one, do not murder. Honor life, the life that he created. The seventh one, do not commit adultery. We honor marriage. No matter what the circumstances are. The eighth one, do not steal. We honor others' accomplishments rather than trying to tear them down. Number nine, do not bear false witness. We always honor the truth. And 10, do not covet. We honor the blessings that we have already received and where they came from. We don't need to worry about somebody else's. There's a few more ways to honor Father. In Proverbs 3 and verse 9, it says, honor the Lord with your substance and with the first fruits of all of your produce. Then your barns will be filled with plenty and your vats will be bursting with wine. And Dick gave a great little testimony about that. He realized that God saw what had taken place, even though it was private. And he gave him a little pat on the back. It's more than just a pat on the back. This concept is huge. Read Malachi 3, verse 10. See if he doesn't open the windows of heaven and pour out a blessing. Are we honoring him in all the ways that we can? You know, here, this is in Proverbs. It says, honor him with the substance, with the first fruits of all of your produce. Do we honor him with our first fruits? With our time, the first of our time. I phrase it, when you first get up in the morning, first thing you do, start chatting with him. Say, good morning, Father. Open my eyes to what you'd have me to do. You led me to awakening this morning. So what would you have me do with the life that you blessed me with today? But for some reason, there's a lot of people out there that think this concept of first fruits doesn't apply anymore today. They think it's void. That it should maybe avoided or overlooked, forgotten. Do they not want the blessing? This congregation is blessed with people who honor God with tithes and offerings. And because of that, this week, we were able to give Jeremy and Kaiser and Rachel a substantial sum of money to whatever their needs are with the situation with the baby. And it's ongoing. They're still in Denver, miles from home. We don't know what's going to happen next week, next year, next month. But God says fill up his storehouse so that there are provisions for times like this. And there's going to be more times, different situations. Like I said, I know there's a lot within the believing community that believe in tithing, the first tithe. But what about the second tithe? We all believe in going to the feast, keeping his feast. But we're also commanded to set aside a tithe so that we can keep the feast. Do we trust him with that money? With our finances? With our feasts? I said our feast, not his feast. Because when we go about it our way, that's when we have to read those scriptures. He says, I hate your feasts. I hate your offerings. I hate your sacrifices. But when we go about it his way, the blessings roll out like a wave that just keeps going and going and going. The blessing isn't simply for us. We get to go to the feast, and there will be abundance. Abundance that we can share with others at the feast. And there's always somebody that could use a little bit of extra help. It might be a widow. It might be a young single person that still is, you know, looking to get solidified in a job or whatever the call may be. Maybe a bigger family. But when there's abundance, we get to share, and we all get to experience a joyful feast. So hopefully right now we're not only making plans to keep the fall feasts, but we've been setting aside a tithe, as commanded, to keep those feasts. I know me for a lot of years, even though I didn't disagree with the concept of tithing, I didn't keep tithes. Every now and then, I'd reach in my pocket, I'd take something out of it, and I'd put it over here and say, there's an offering. It's nice, but that's not what he commanded. Lori and I decided to start tithing the way he commands us, or at least the best to our knowledge, and all of a sudden, there's abundance. And the way Dick said, it's not just now that we get to go to the feast and do some things that we weren't able to do before. It's also a case where we're blessed in ways so that the tithing didn't hinder us in any way. I can't tell you how many times I've heard the excuse, I can't go to the feast, or at least the full feast, because my employer, my paycheck. When I hear that, I already know they're not keeping a second tithe. Period. I guarantee you, if you keep a second tithe, God's going to look out for you, and your employer, you're going to be able to go to the feast. And there's going to be funds, even if you don't get a paycheck that week, there'll be enough to cover for that. Because that's the way God wants it. Deuteronomy 14 and verse 22 says, set apart a tithe of the yield of your seed that is brought in yearly from the field, In the presence of the Lord your God, in the place that he will choose as a dwelling for his name, you shall eat the tithe of your grain, your wine, your oil, as well as its firstlings of your herd and your flock, so that you may learn to fear the Lord your God always. The word fear there implies to honor with reverence. So again, do we set aside a feast tithe that we can keep the feast in abundance rather than barely getting there, or maybe not getting there for the full time, or not being able to help others? You know, that tithe that we set aside, he makes it very clear how it can be used. It's in order to keep the feast, which means if you're not going to get a paycheck that week, it's okay to pay the utility bill so that you can go to the feast without worrying about that. To make the mortgage payment, make maintenance on the car so that it'll get you to and from the feast comfortably. He wants us to attend his feast, and he wants us to enjoy it, not worry about it. I can't tell you how many feasts I went to. And yes, I was there, but my stress level was to the roof. And it was because I didn't have tithe money. I had what I could scrap together. And so the whole time I'm at the feast, I'm worrying about, oh man, I want to go hang out with them, but they want to go do this activity. It's going to cost this much money. I don't have that. I need an excuse. You know, I don't get to enjoy the feast the way he would have me enjoy the feast. Read the verses about just the feast in general and what they're supposed to feel like for those that attend. It's called feast for a reason. More ways to honor God. What about the willingness to use our gifts and talents that he has put it within us? Not just acknowledging them, but a willingness to actually use them at every opportunity. Sometimes we're a little bit like Moses, like, are you sure you really need me to do that? No, you don't want me. No, you picked the wrong person. No, when he gives us an opportunity, we just go, okay, you're going to have to walk me through this one because I feel like I'm in way over my head. And he will. We need to remain pure in all speech and in all actions. And I can tell you this one I struggle in greatly. In all speech. I'm shocked at how often I hear churchgoers swear. Not at church, but on the days they're not at church. Like, how does that happen? All actions. Do we compromise our actions the way we compromise maybe our speech at times? Another way to honor God is to simply love others. No matter what the situation is, even when we don't feel like loving them. And man, some people can get really creative at making me not want to love them. When someone around us errs, we don't run away from them. We need to simply stop and love on them. Encourage them even more. Summed up with this passage, Ephesians 2 and verse 1. You are dead through the trespasses and sins in which you once lived, following the course of this world, following the ruler of the power of the air, the spirit that is now at work among those who are disobedient. All of us once lived among them in the passions of our flesh, following the desires of flesh and senses, and we were by nature children of wrath, like everyone else. But God, our Father, who is rich in mercy, out of the great love which he loved us, even when we were dead through our trespasses, made us alive together with Christ. By grace you have been saved, and raised us up with him and seated us with him in the heavenly places with Yeshua, so that in the ages to come he might show the immeasurable riches of his grace and in kindness towards us in Jesus Christ. For by grace you have been saved through faith, and this is not your own doing. It is the gift of our Father in heaven. Not the result of works, so that no one may boast. For we are what he has made us, created in Christ Jesus for good works, which God prepared beforehand to be our way of life. This weekend, we do honor the dads. But at the same time, we should greatly honor our Father in heaven, the one and only being who created us through a magnificent plan, one who not only wants us to love or wants to love us and protect us now, but wants to give us life evermore.